Well, whether it's a marsh, a bog, a fen, or a swamp, we are surrounded by wetlands, and that's a good thing. They are very critical habitat for many creatures and serve important functions as natural filters for our watersheds, among other things. You may have a wetland on your private property, but maybe you're not quite sure how to be a good steward of it. Well, we have some great information to share with you today because Katie Belfus is back. She is the Outreach Programs Director for the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. She's been with us many times, and it's always great to have her. Great to have you back, Katie.
Always fun, Larry. Thanks so much.
Well, I tell you, it's really nice because you guys have a new resource available, which I think is really cool. It's called My Healthy Wetland, a handbook for wetland owners. Now, how'd that come about?
Well, in our work, we receive a lot of calls from private landowners wanting to know what they should do with their wetlands. And there's a lot of resources out there, but some of them are more technical and some of them are online, which is hard for some people to access. So we and we heard from our partners, too, that they needed this resource to be able to share with folks that they worked with in the field. So we responded to those demands and produced this book. We wanted it to be highly accessible, really welcoming and really inspiring. And I think the suite of photos that we were able to collect the book really helps with that in immeasurable ways. And really, we hope it's a good intro to a lot of different wetland landowners to help them ask some more questions and seek some more information.
Yeah, it's a great book. How much of the state is in wetland?
The state has lost half of our wetlands. Historically, we had about 10 million acres, and we've lost about half of that. It varies, you know, with the different parts of the states have more wetland, or of the state have more wetlands than others. But we've lost a lot, so every bit that remains is important. And really important in that number is that 75% of the remaining wetlands on the landscape are privately owned. Often people think, oh, gee, the DNR is out there. They'll take care of it, and the Forest Service and those agencies will do it for us, conservation. But in fact, it's private landowners that have the biggest impact on wetlands in our state because 75% of the remaining wetlands are in private ownership.
And so they are they the primary audience then for your new book?
They are definitely the primary audience for this new book. We've, you know, we go to a lot of events with private landowners, folks who are taking really good care of their woodlands or their prairies, and they'll say to us, gosh, I've got this wetland, but I really don't know what to do with it.
Uh-huh.
Because there hasn't been a lot of focused outreach to private wetland landowners. There's lots of good stuff for other natural resource systems, and we're eager to help develop that for wetland landowners as well. So this is a first step for us.
Yeah, I think it's kind of interesting because one of the points of the book, or one of the first topics, is How do you know if you have a wetland on your property? That's one of the first things in the book.
That's exactly right. And it's one of the most important questions to ask because a lot of people think that you need to have ducks and cattail in order for something to be a wetland and water. And so knowing that, in fact, wetlands have they come in a lot of different shapes and sizes and colors, and that's a really important thing to get a grip on because there's probably more wetlands on your land than you might be aware of. The three factors that a wetland needs to have in order to be a wetland are special soils that are developed under wet conditions. We call those hydric soils. Water at or near the surface of the soil for all or part of the year. That's a really important point.
Yeah.
Depends on the time of year. And has special, specially adapted vegetation adapted to be to deal with wet conditions in certain parts of the year. So those are the sort of three things that unify wetlands. But as you said in your intro, Larry, there's a lot of different wetland types. And one of the things this book does is sort of begin to introduce a landowner to the different sort of big groups of wetland types that we have in Wisconsin: sedge meadows, marshes, forested wetlands, shrub thickets, and other sort of more rare and specialized types, to just sort of walk through what the options might be so that folks can take a look and see what they might have.
Katie Belfus, our guest today from the Wisconsin Wetlands Association, talking about wetlands. Started out by talking about their new book that they have out that's directed right at you if you have a wetland or think you might have one. It's called My Healthy Wetland. Even if you don't, I think it really makes for interesting reading, to be perfectly honest. Join in with your questions about wetlands. Do you have any on your property? Maybe you have a question about it. Do you actively manage your wetlands? Maybe you've got an experience to share. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post on my Facebook page. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show and you can post a question or a comment there. And we certainly love to hear from you. You cover wildlife in the booklet too, which I think is kind of cool.
We cover wildlife because it's the number one thing that people say to us. That's the driving factor for why they want to protect any natural area on their property, but particularly wetlands. They want to see ducks. They want to see herons. They want to mm-hmm. see other wildlife that use wetlands. And wetlands are super critical to a lot of wildlife in our state. Something like 75% of the wildlife in our state depend on wetlands at some point of their life cycle. It might just be for breeding. It might just be for rearing their young. It might be all the time. But it's, you know, even an upland species that use wetland for just a short period of their life cycle, if they don't have that place at that important yeah. period, we got problems. So we do want to definitely focus on wildlife and as an entry point for lots of landowners.
And I think I remember reading, wasn't about a third of the endangered species
mm-hmm. That's right.
Rely on wetlands or need wetlands?
That sounds right, Larry. That sounds like the right statistic.
Oh, man. So indeed, very important. Want to give our listeners a chance to join in. You can join us at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. Al in Land O'Lakes up first here. Al, hi. Thank you for calling.
My family has a property, lake property on the Cisco chain, and then there's a lagoon that comes in. It's still navigable because I just barely got a boat out of there. But the neighbors are on the other side of their property line, and they've taken to pushing trees down into the lagoon. They don't like it because it makes mosquitoes, that type of deal. Anyway, it's full of beautiful lily pads, pitcher plants, you name it, ducks, muskrat. And I'm retired now and don't have the money to hire somebody to open this back up. And I was just wondering if there's any money available for that type of thing.
Yeah, good question, Al. And lagoon, you know, one of the things we run into is that different people use different words for different terms. And a person really needs to get out and look at the feature that he has on his property and that he shares with his neighbors to know if it's a natural feature or something that was put on the landscape earlier in the property's history. Often we do have sites that where ponds have been installed with certain goals in mind, and they fill up over time or they cause other problems. And so one of the things we really stress in this book is really trying to get to know the land that you have, trying to understand how water flows into and out of your wetland, where does it come from, and what's the best tack to take with the property that you have. On the point that you made, Al, about your neighbor dumping things into the lagoon, depending on how that site is classified, that might be something that they could get in trouble for. So you'd want to check in with your local water management specialist about the situation and let them know wetland fill is not an activity that's allowed in our state. It's a one way that we protect wetlands. So putting in things in wetlands is a bad plan.
Yeah, there we go. Thanks, Al, for calling. Appreciate it. Bob in Franklin, your turn. Hi, Bob.
Oh, hi. Yeah, I own a property that has a number of springs that feed a small creek.
Yeah.
And it doesn't run all the time, but most of the time there's some water. Previous owner had put in an earthen dam to create a pond, and it has a device to control the depth of the pond. Is that something that's recommended, or is that something that would be discouraged?
Well, again, you got to know the site. But my sense is that we know more now than we used to know about how to take care of natural creeks and wetlands. Sometimes we've dammed those things up to make, you know, ponds and features that we want to have. Taking it out is an option. It needs special permitting and permissions to make sure it's done properly, but that could restore the flow of that natural stream or in wetland that might have been there previously. You can also work, if it has that water level control structure, sometimes you can work to modify that to mimic natural conditions, to back up more water at times of the year in the spring where there might have been more water traditionally and let more out later. So working with that water control structure is an option for you as well. Generally speaking, if there's a way to restore hydrology in a wetland site without putting in artificial structures, that's the preference. But because we have so many changes on our landscape, often that's not possible and we need to work within the confines of the situation we have. So.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Great question.
Oh, how do I get that book?
Oh, great question. Thanks for saying that. It's available through our website, wisconsinwetlands.org. Right at the top of that main page, there's a link that takes you to the page where you can fill out an online order form. We're able to offer it for free to landowners who have property in the counties along Lake Michigan because of funding from the Wisconsin Coastal Management Program. But we're also happy to provide it for a very reasonable, low cost to others in the state.
Mm-hmm.
That's wisconsinwetlands.org.
Exactly. And we'll put that up on the Facebook page following the show, too.
It's up on our – I think it's already up there.
Super.
Probably already up there. Steve in Waterford, hi. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, thank you. Say, I have a five-acre hardwood, mature hardwood land that was a remnant from a farm. And when we bought it, the farmer told us that there was a small area that his cows used to get a drink of water every once in a while. And it was completely dry when we built our new house, but the first year after that, it gets to be, it's about 8,000 square feet in area, and it gets to be 7 feet deep in the middle, and it only lasts until about September, and then it's dry for the rest of the year. And I know there's a special name for that type of a pond, if you want to call it a pond. I think it starts with a V. I'm not sure what it is, and that's what I was hoping the host could, or the guest could tell me.
Sure. Great question, Steve. Vernal pool is the V word I think you're looking for. The other more commonly used term in Wisconsin is ephemeral pond. Ephemeral, you know, means a short term. And so that describes the situation that you have, which I would hazard to guess is one of the most undermapped wetland types in Wisconsin, these forested ephemeral ponds. Some of the wetland mapping is done with aerial photography where you can see water on the landscape. But if you can't see it through the trees, you can't map it. So it's a super important community type, especially for reproduction of waterfowl and amphibians.
So there you have it. And you might want to get a copy of the book, My Healthy Wetlands.
For sure, I will.
Yeah, definitely get a copy of the book because I think it could be extremely useful for you. We have lots of callers online here. Maybe Daryl in Exonia. Daryl, hi.
Hi. I was wondering, I have some wetlands, and I want to dig a pond. Do I have to, like, go before, I mean, there's so much water there that I knew if I dug a hole, there would be a pond there.
Yeah.
Well, that's what many people think, and it may or may not be true, because it really depends on what's going on underneath your wetland, what the soil types are underneath there. Sometimes there's a role for ponds. We tend to be fairly circumspect about when we advise them.
And we'll get into that a little bit more. Well, let's take a quick look at the news, weather, find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Night. And then we'll be back with that very topic. Stay with us. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Wisconsin has amazingly varied landscapes, does it not? And even within the category of wetlands, there are, I don't know, a dozen very distinct types of wetlands that we can talk about. Larry Mueller here. So great to have you along today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And always great to have Katie Belfus with us from the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. She comes by every so often to talk about what's going on in the association. And we wanted her in today because, in part, to talk about a new book that they have out for a good one for you. It's a handbook for wetland owners. It's called My Healthy Wetland. And even if you don't have a wetland, or maybe think you don't, you might be finding this a very useful book. Questions about wetlands, you can join in at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. Or post on my Facebook page. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page, and certainly you can post your questions or comments or even photos there. And Katie, as always, thank you so much. We were talking about ponds earlier, and let's go back to that topic.
Let's do, because we didn't give Daryl a good answer to his question.
Yeah.
So ponds are typically things that people put on the landscape. They are areas where they dig a hole so that it can fill up with water. The water only stays if the soil that's underneath the pond can allow it to stay. If it's sandy, that water's not going to stay. Often people dig ponds in what are natural wetlands because they're trying to create better wildlife habitat. And we're learning more that that often isn't the best way to create more wildlife habitat. We have a lot of ponds on the landscape. In fact, the number of ponds is increasing, whereas the number of wetlands is generally decreasing. And often when you dig a pond in a wetland area, you're reducing the amount of good quality habitat for the plants and animals that might have lived in that wetland when you put the pond in. One example ties back to the question Steve had earlier about his ephemeral wetland. Ephemeral wetlands are super important in the spring, especially for reproduction of amphibians and turtles and other wildlife that need temporary water where there are no fish, where they can breed, because the fish come and eat the eggs. So if you want to protect your babies, you lay them in a little pool that you know doesn't have fish in it. If you go dig a pond in that area and put fish in there, that's really great for fishing, but it's going to hurt your frog population. So you're having to do weighing benefits and costs when you're talking about this. What we really promote in this book in terms of an approach is getting to know the wetland that you have. What's there? Where's the water come from? What are the soils? What kind of soils do you have? And what wildlife lives there? How can you manage it to increase the habitat that you already have, to improve that habitat? Sometimes it's appropriate to do a scrape where you can open up some open water. Other times it might be best to leave it alone without open water because of the wildlife that that particular wetland type supports.
And Gary in Iron County has a question for you, so I'm going to go to him. Gary, thanks for calling.
Sure.
What's on your mind?
I live in Iron County on Carolyn Lake, and I'm off-grid up here. Anyway, the mine is supposed to come in within 4 miles of me. Now, I have some ponds on my land. Does the government have any funds to reimburse landowners if their wetland disappears due to the mine?
Well, that mine is a really big question, and our staff has been doing a lot of work trying to get to know the wetlands up there, leading a lot of field trips, giving a lot of presentations, because it's one of the lesser known areas of our state, but really, really beautiful place. You know that, for you live there, Gary. There is no mine yet. That mine is not a done deal. Some people say that it's a done deal, but it's not because it hasn't gone through the whole process yet. And so that's my first point, is there may not ever be a mine there. We just don't know. It's still in process. And in regards to whether there's any sort of compensation, it depends where your property is with respect to the development, if it ever were to go in. And it's a trickier question than I can answer on this radio program. But I'd like to hold fast with the resources in that area are too important. The watershed, it's one of the most intact watersheds in our state in terms of the upstream water, wetlands, and the way it connects in with Lake Superior. It's a remarkable resource that we need to know more about before we go tinkering with it.
Yeah, there we go. Thank you for calling. Dan in Partyville, hello to you.
Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call. I've got another pond question for you. We live on 8 acres, and we have a natural pond. It's probably about a quarter acre. It's spring fed. There used to be fish in it. Now there's, you know, spring peepers, bullfrogs. We get visited by wood ducks, great blue herons, and egrets and muskrats. Unfortunately, a owner previous to us had a machine shed down there, and he'd work on cars, and he'd push the carcasses into the pond to get rid of them. I understand some of them were removed. And I can't afford to have that pond dredged. It turns green and duckweedy this time of year.
Mm-hmm.
And are there any programs to help clean up a pond like this? It's a natural pond. The owners behind us, they have ponds on their property, too. I don't know what kind of condition theirs are in. But we get geese, and, you know, there's a lot of wildlife. The deer drink at them. Is there anything to help clean my pond up?
Yeah, that's a great question. In our experience, most of the funding that's available to help private landowners with wetlands are to help folks who have converted wetlands that they want to restore back to wetlands. And it's harder to find money to do what you're talking about, even though I think it's really important to manage property and for us to help landowners be able to afford those things. I really do think we need to look at developing more of those programs. But I do think it still is worth a call to your NRC NRCS office because I'm not an expert on all of their programs. Actually, we should have the gentleman in the previous hour here to answer
Tom,
that question.
Yeah, Tom could answer that one.
Yeah, but I would call your local NRCS office. I would also suggest contacting your local water management specialist at the DNR just to let them know of the situation and see if they have any other ideas about where you might be able to go for some assistance with that. So one of the things we strongly recommend is fix problems with your hydrology, the flow of water or the way water acts in your landscape. That's the very important thing to do with any wetland, and getting old car parts out of the wetland certainly would be part of that.
Yeah, I think that EQIP program that Tom France was talking about earlier might apply. It's certainly, Tom Kraft, I should say, it's certainly worth a look. So the Natural Resources Conservation Service, or NRCS, wi.nrcs, you go there, you're probably going to find the information, at least where to look and who to talk to about learning more about it.
The other thing we've got at the back of this handbook, My Healthy Wetland, that we're talking about is a sort of directory of local groups in northeast Wisconsin or eastern Wisconsin that can help private landowners in one way or another. So that's a broader answer to your listening audience, but there's resources there of folks you can contact for other assistance as well.
Okay, there you go. Don in Brule, Wisconsin, we'll give you a chance next. Don, hi, thanks for calling.
Hello.
What can we do for you?
Hello.
Yes.
Yes. I'm fortunate, as well as many of my neighbors, that we are living on wetlands that are actually perking. It's a perfect wetland day up in the northwestern Wisconsin, by the way. And the water is percolate. You know, we have water that percolates out and eventually flows into a stream that goes into the Gull Creek that goes into the Brule. And the thing is that what we were just wondering is I'm hearing all this talking about financing, but it sounded like most of that financing, is that all going to Lake Michigan? Or is there stuff that's going to help out the people up in the far northwestern corner going into Lake Superior?
Thanks for that question so that I can clarify my comment. This particular book, this is the first edition we've made of this book, and it focuses on eastern Wisconsin because there's some unique situations in there with regard to bedrock and various situations. A lot of the information in this book applies equally statewide, and you can draw on it yourself, even though you're up in northwest Wisconsin. It just so happens that the funding source so that we could do this project wants to support northeast Wisconsin, and so that's why that came up. But the information is certainly available, and the Wisconsin Coastal Management Program does a ton of funding of wetland conservation work in the Superior Basin as well. We hope to be able to produce additional editions of this handbook that would talk about the unique wetland situation, say, in the Driftless area or in northwest Wisconsin. So give us some time so we can raise some funds to be able to produce that, but that's our intent.
And thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Somebody else was wondering if there's an area that used to be a wetland, but it isn't anymore. What actually causes that?
Well, often we people cause that. We wanted to expand the amount of acreage that we could farm because that was the highest and best use of property at that particular time. It was before we understood, I think, really how important wetlands were to the landscape, and we regarded them really as wastelands, and getting rid of them was doing a public service. So we often put in drain tile or dug ditches or did other water control measures in order to drain land that typically would have been too wet for farming to make it able to be farmed. So that's often what we're talking about, is land that was drained, that used to be wetland, that still has the fundamental soil conditions, even though they've been disrupted by plowing and whatnot, but returning some of those things, removing some of those features that drained the land.
So it is possible to some extent to bring those lands back.
It is possible. The most recent research shows that those restored wetlands have a hard time meeting up with the natural wetlands, that we can't do in a couple of years what Mother Nature has done over tens of thousands of years. But definitely it's a step in the right direction for sure to restore those converted wetlands.
And there's probably some regulations relating to wetland restoration.
Yeah, they've done a nice job. This DNR has done a nice job of developing a special permit process that for people who are doing wetland restoration to make that easier to happen.
Mm-hmm. How can How can people get more information about preserving wetlands into the future? There are some options for that, aren't
there? There are some options for that. The most important thing you can do to preserve your wetlands into the future is to take really good care of them and to talk with your family about their importance, to raise your children aware of the resource that your family owns and the pride that you take in caring for it and building that family ethic for your wetland. If you want to do something more formal, there are programs with land trusts, which are agents groups, usually nonprofit groups that work with private landowners in order to put some permanent legal protections on their land so that it stipulates that no matter what, this land can never be developed or each case is unique, but basically does long-term protection that carries on with the deed regardless of the owner. So the local land trusts were really important in the development of this book because they are the ones that work one-on-one with landowners a lot around the state, and we wanted to make sure we were producing something that would help them in that tool. But they can meet and develop individually a plan for a particular property based on the family's wishes and the what's the natural resource values of the property.
Katie Belfis, our guest today from the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. Yeah, we have open lines, so we can get you on pretty quickly. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. Or post on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. We'd love to hear from you. Lisa emailed us. Is there anyone you can call to come out and take a look at your property if you're not sure about what you have or how to proceed, even after looking at all the information? Can you get in trouble if they, you know, find restricted or prohibited species or something like
sure.
that?
Sure. Well, nothing, you can read the book as a great information and resources, and I really advise that. And I'll give you the phone number for folks to order a copy. It's 608-250-9971. But you're right, Lisa, that nothing compares with actually walking your property with a person who can help talk you through what some of the issues are, what some of the challenges that you're facing, the questions that you have. That's a really underdeveloped resource in our state, and it's something our organization is working to try to improve. We have limited staff, so we can only visit so many wetland properties, but we do invite you to call us, and if we're in your neck of the woods attending meetings or events or workshops, we will do our best to come by and meet with you and take a look at your property. So give us a call at our office, and we'll see what we can do.
And again, that number is 608-250-9971.
Exactly.
We can put those up on my Facebook page, too, and have that for people. Mary Ann in Waukesha. Thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi. I just learned lately that there is invasive cattail species. How do you identify the difference between native cattails, and how do these affect wildlife?
Great question, and it is something that is relatively new and a lot of folks aren't aware of. We do have a native cattail to Wisconsin, but unfortunately an invasive species that's come from other ecosystems, other parts of our country, has come into the state. And even more unfortunate is the two species are now breeding. They're hybridizing, as is the case with many hybrids. The hybrid is more aggressive than either of the two parents. And so as to how do you identify the native versus the non-native, all that hybridizing is really messing with our ability to do that, because the hybrids are intermediate. And it's really, in fact, some people resort to genetic testing to try to tell the difference, because it is so very hard. You can tell based on how thick that cattail is growing in your wetland. If there's nothing else there, you probably have the invasive. Mm. If you've got scattered cattail or little small patches that aren't aggressive, you probably have the native one. There's certain taxonomic characteristics you can look at, but it's hard to do that on the radio, so we'll skip that one. It's in the book, so you can take a look at that. But generally, if you look at the behavior of the cattail in your property, on your wetland, that's how you know whether you have the invasive or not. It crowds out other species of plant. And so if you have wildlife that depend on a certain species for feeding, and that species has gotten crowded out, that wildlife can't go there anymore. The buffet is no longer available. So it reduces plant diversity for sure, and then by way of that, it reduces animal diversity as well.
And by the book that Katie mentioned, it's My Healthy Wetland, available from the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. It's a great book, and we have you can go to the Wisconsin Wetlands Association to get a copy of it. It's, again, My Healthy Wetland, a handbook for wetland owners, and certainly available. We have a link on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show as well to it. So, Ann in Milwaukee, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi, good morning or good afternoon. I have a question. Who would be interested in the start of a Phragmites infestation in the wetlands area on a big lake in Walworth County where sandhills and terns nest?
Oh, lots of people are interested in that. Phragmites is another super big problem weed that's a relative newcomer and super aggressive and has the same impact of cattail in terms of reducing habitat quality. The Department of Natural Resources has been, I believe, tracking where Phragmites is so they can monitor the spread and try to direct control efforts accordingly. If you call our office, we can put you in touch with those folks there. You can also probably search the DNR's webpage for Phragmites and get some information about that, who to contact with that report.
And that number is the same number you can use to order the booklet. So it's 608-250-9971.
That's right.
That's that number.
Thanks,
right.
Ann.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And let's turn to Nan in Mosinee next. Hi.
Hello.
Hi, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Could you please tell me the difference between a floodplain and a wetland?
Okay.
Floodplains are wetlands in most instances. And it's again, it gets to that it's wet some of the time, but not all of the time. So there's a lot of times of the year, depending on what's happening with the river that the floodplain is along, when floodplains are dry because the rivers are low. But floodplains are where nature designed for water to go when there's too much water. In the spring, for example, when we're dealing with snowmelt and spring rains, our rivers fill up and they need to go somewhere. And so, you know, historically, naturally, that water would have overflowed the banks onto the floodplain, stored there until water levels in the river went down, and then the water would slowly go back into the river and go about its business. We've developed so many floodplains and built roads along them and houses and cities that often doesn't happen anymore. We've put levees along. So floodplains are one type of wetland.
Thank you very much.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. Butch and Broadhead, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. See, I had a question in relation to an article I just finished, or I'm reading, actually, in the Smithsonian this month.
Sure.
And they were talking about building buffers across the United States and perhaps the world where there would be areas for the animals and the plants that are native to the whole world, and we would have to work around them. And I was just curious if there was any long-range plan where maybe these wetlands would be interconnected, where not so much national parks in that order.
Yeah, Butch, that's a really interesting question, and I haven't read that article, so I can't speak to that exactly, but I can say that whereas an individual landowner can make good impact on their own property by taking care of it, the import of the benefit will be so much bigger if a landowner can collaborate with his or her neighbors in order to work together, because so often our property boundaries pay no attention to nature. We just draw a line and that's our property. And the natural system doesn't recognize that line. So conservation anywhere is going to be more effective if we work across property boundaries and geopolitical boundaries in order to create natural systems that are collaborative in nature. So I think we are, you know, there's certain undeveloped areas on our planet that perhaps should stay that way, undeveloped. But I think here in Wisconsin, for a large part, people are here, and we're going to have to figure out a way to conserve what we can in the context of people, because we're here and we're going to stay, probably.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much.
Thanks very much for calling. Yeah, and we were at 10 million acres of wetlands, and now we're at about 5 million acres. Mm-hmm. In the last few years, has that number been decreasing faster? Or?
Well, yeah, certainly in the last couple of decades,
it's slowed.
The pace has slowed because we've recognized more the importance of wetlands and we've put wetland protection measures in place. But it still happens and it still needs to happen in some areas, where there's no other choice. Trying to minimize that loss is certainly important. And most of our regulations do aim to minimize the destruction of natural wetlands.
And your book, My Healthy Wetlands, again, in 30, 40 seconds, can you give us a little synopsis of what people are going to find?
It tells you what wetlands are, why they matter, and how you can care for them.
And again, how do we get copies of those?
You can contact our office at 608-250-9971. Or better yet, if you have access to the internet, visit our website, wisconsinwetlands.org. Click at the link at the very top of the page that talks about the My Healthy Wetland Handbook, and you'll find a link to an online form where you can make a request, and we'll get that out to you.
Is the book online as well, that you could just look at it online?
The book is not currently available online. We're talking about that. One of the things we want to be able to do is follow up and help landowners individually. So if we can mail them a copy and then follow up later, we can be of more help. So,
Katie, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for being with us today. I really appreciate it.
Appreciate it, too. It's always fun.
Katie Balfus, our guest from the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. Always great to have her with us, and always great to have you listening in, too. Stay with us. Lots in store here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.